What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need. From athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace. To nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist. Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Hey guys, I'm Cameron Stover from huntinggeardeals.com today to bring you another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm going to be joined by Logan Holtz from Quiet Cat to talk about some unique ways to use electric bikes during the hunting season. We're also going to talk about the 2024 Quiet Cat lineup that you're going to want to hear. So, without further ado, let's get to the show. Today's episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast is brought to you by Code Blue Sense. Yes, it's springtime, but guess what? Before you know it, we'll be out running trail cameras, taking inventory of the deer that we have on our properties, and one of the favorite tools that I utilize all season long are mock scrapes. So for all your mock scrape needs for success this season, check out Code Blue Sense. All right, guys, today on the podcast, I'm joined by Logan Holtz, the Director of Marketing from Quiet Cat. Welcome to the podcast, Logan.
Hey, thanks for having me, Cameron. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm looking forward to kind of talking a little bit about e-bikes and how we utilize those in the outdoors and a little bit more about Quiet Cat as a company. So if you can, take us all the way back to where Quiet Cat came from and how you got to today.
Yeah, so Quiet Cat started 10 years ago, believe it or not, which in e-bike terms is ancient. We were kind of the pioneers, the first people to ever do fat tire electric bikes. It all started with Jake and Justin Roach, our co-founders. They're twins, actually. Kind of a cool story. They're big whitetail hunters. They own and operate a whitetail hunting outfit out of Illinois in the Golden Triangle. So if you guys are from the Midwest, you're familiar with the area and you know the caliber of deer that they get to chase around. What they decided is, or what they just came to learn, is that these old whitetails are just really cagey and they're really sensitive to pressure. And that was 10 years ago. And like a lot of people know that now, but you know, I think maybe 10 years ago, people weren't taking hunting as seriously as we do now. And so the Roach brothers were really looking for ways to hunt their properties more frequently with less pressure, right? So they wanted more days in the tree with less impact on the land. And what they arrived at was an electric tricycle. So that was Quiet Cat number one. It was actually a trike. It wasn't a bike. Two wheels in the back, one wheel in the front, completely electric, ran off a golf cart battery. And what they were realizing is, okay, we can get to the stand scent free because our feet aren't hitting the ground. It doesn't create nearly as much noise. There's nothing. We call it a bipedal cadence. So when a human walks, thump, 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 the animal is triggered to that sound a lot more than just like the sound of wheels, which is just like leaves rustling, essentially. And then, so no set spreading scent, no bipedal cadence. And then you can get the tree stand without getting all hot and sweaty. So your scent impact when you're in the tree is far less too. So they started with this trike, and then they just kind of realized, man, we'd like to be able to get into some tighter areas. There's some single trails that we can't take the trike down. And so then it converted into a bike. And so for the last 8 years, Quiet Cat has continued to pioneer the e-bike, right? We've been the first to market on pretty much every technology that you know of today around e-bikes. Obviously, we've had some competitors come into the wake in the hunting e-bike space, but they just continue to be 2-3 years behind us in terms of technology and innovation. And we're proud of the fact that we're always pushing the limit. And we'll get into this later, but you'll see that legacy continue here in May of this year.
Man, that's awesome. So I've actually had a chance to go to Jake's place out in Illinois to pick up a bike. We got to borrow one. We had a business, a mutual friend that was borrowing a bike for a hunt. And I drove out there and picked that bike up for him. So it's pretty cool. I actually got to stay there for a little bit and meet all those guys. He's got a nice little outfit, great property to hunt. So it's kind of cool to see where that started and where we're at today.
Yeah, man. And a shameless plug for those guys. They're actually converting that property. They're taking half of the property that they typically guide on and they're converting it into a hunting lodge right now. So it's been cool to see that whole process happen. And, you know, again, what they found with the benefit of the bikes is you can just hunt so much more. Like when people think e-bikes, I think they think, oh, public land use, like get deeper into the public land, at least out west where I'm at, that's where how people think of them. And it's true, there's huge benefits on public land. But I honestly think there's more benefit for the private landowner that owns a small little chunk of property and they want to be able to hunt it more with less pressure and less impact. Like there is so much benefit there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I've had a chance with huntinggeardeals.com to test a lot of e-bikes for the last few years in the field. And what I found myself utilizing e-bikes a lot for this past season was, hey, I'm in a hurry. I don't want to walk for the next 2,000 yards to get to this tree stand. I'm going to go ride it 100 yards from the stand, park it real quick, hop in the tree, and I'm able to quickly adapt to where I need to hunt at. And if you've ever, I had a mountain biking background and not that I raced or anything like that. I was just needed to figure out something to, fun to do to get in shape. So I used to ride a lot, some high-end carbon bikes that are relatively the same price as some of the nice Quiet Cat bikes and stuff like that. So having that experience in the woods on a bike allowed me to adapt that to my hunting scenario a lot quicker. And you mentioned the least amount of impact going to and from. The same trail systems that I can go walk or run for exercise, I can ride that e-bike because they're multi-purpose trails. I jump deer walking and running a lot more frequently than I do when I'm on that bike. And simply because they don't respond to that bike the same way they do as a human walking or running.
Yep. Yeah, I have countless examples of literally riding within 10 to 20 yards of bedded deer and bedded elk on a bike. You would never be able to do that on foot. Never in a million years. Part of it is to scent. And so I talked about it before, but I have a stand in Wisconsin, which is where I grew up in Wisconsin, hunting whitetails. And there's the wind is almost always, I'm trying not to use my hands to describe this. I'll try to use directions so the listeners can follow. But you imagine that, you know, property north to south, east to west, the bedding area is on the west side of the property. The trail passes along the east side of that bedding area, and the trail runs north to south down the east edge of that bedding area. And that wind is almost always blowing because of how the topography is from east to west. So you have to pass through the scent cone that goes into the bedding area to get to your tree stand that's on the north side of that bedding area. Walking through that scent cone along that bedding area takes about 10 to 15 minutes. I can do it in less than a minute on an e-bike. So you're passing through that scent cone so much faster. And they just don't, it doesn't trigger. They don't get to sit and digest that smell and realize it's a threat and leave. Like they just kind of, it might hit their nose and they might be like, oh, that was weird, right? And then they just keep either eating or stay embedded. And so it's huge.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it's almost like, it's not the same concept of ozone, of course, because we're not trying to break odors, but you're reducing that much of a difference in how much time your scent is being traveling down that direction. So I like that concept.
And then the other one that you touched on, which I think as you get into an e-bike or, you know, own your first e-bike, like I got my first one 8 years ago, and that's how I ended up here at Quiet Cat is I met Jake and Justin. I've worked in the hunting industry my whole career and, you know, started at Cabela's and was a marketing director for Burris and Steiner Optics. And I met those guys through going to shows, industry shows. And I got my first e-bike 8 years ago. I hunt at least 14 states a year on an e-bike every year, public land mostly, a little bit of private land in the Midwest. But, you know, you learn more and more ways to use them every time you use them. And you learn more applications for them, both in and outside of hunting. And you hit, in my mind, number one, and people don't think about it, but it's time. Time in life is the greatest opportunity cost. You only have so much of it, right? That's the fact. And so the time that you save not walking is, to me, the greatest benefit. We both have kids. We just talked about that. I take my kids. I have to take them hunting with me. I have to take them on hunting trips with me, right? I'm not going to ditch my kids. So spring's coming up. It's turkey season. I'm about to hunt 12 states this year. People are like, man, how in the hell do you do that with a family of two kids, right? I have a 2.5-year-old and a 1-year-old. A, I have a supporting and loving wife. B, they come with me. The whole family, we load them in a camper and I go on my turkey tour. So then the question becomes, well, how do you work when you do this, man? Well, A, I mostly hunt weekends. But B, when you have an e-bike, I can get up in the morning, in the dark, rip in 3 miles. It takes me 5 minutes. 5 minutes to get in that deep. I can get under a roost, get on a bird, get that bird, and I can be back and set up working in my camper by 8 a.m. No problem. That gives me 2.5 hours to hunt. 2.5 hours to hunt on foot is a lot different than 2.5 hours to hunt on e-bike.
Oh, absolutely. So
time for me, by far and away, number one. Like the amount I've been able to continue to hunt, fish, shoot, and camp with kids because of my e-bike is night and day difference than if I didn't have it.
Now, we didn't discuss this, but how old are your kids, if you don't mind me asking?
Daughter that's 2.5 and a son that's 1.
Okay, so too young to throw them in the back of the cart and then haul them around to and from the stand. So
they love the burly rides. They like going on bike rides, and that's another benefit. Like, you know, you mentioned exercise. Sometimes you get done with work and you're just feeling lazy. You don't want to go on a ride, but the kids still get to ride in the burly with me because I just go punch the throttle and give them a ride. They don't know the difference if I'm pedaling or not, right?
no.
But to your point, yeah, not old enough to shoot yet. Like my daughter, my 2.5-year-old is infatuated with scouting. Like when I go scouting for elk, you know, every morning in September before work, like she's with me. She loves it. She'll wake up at the crack of dawn to go, you know, sit in the duck blind with me or to go elk scouting. She loves it. She's just not quite old enough to start doing it herself yet.
Yeah, she'll have a good foundation when that time comes, that's for sure.
Yeah, yes, sir.
So, So we talked about the time savings, and that's a lot of things that when you look at an e-bike as a consumer that you don't really consider. You consider price, and you consider hauling it to and from. And that's usually, and then whether or not it's legal on the public ground that you have to offer. But the benefits that I've found utilizing e-bikes is outside of that typical range, what you're looking at. Those benefits that just don't get displayed on an ad on the website.
Yeah. And what I discuss is impossible. Like, that's a problem you're always trying to solve as a marketing professional. Like, how do I get what I just described to you as a time savings? How do you get that across in a print ad? It's not going to happen.
Never.
Like, you can't. You could try. But until you have a chance to sit down with somebody and explain it the way I did, it's never going to register. And even after you explain it, it probably registers and someone goes, oh, yeah, okay. You know, he's got a point. But it doesn't really truly register until you do it. Like, you have that bike and you rip out in the morning real quick, get on a bird. Whether you get it killed or not, you have that interaction, and you come back and then you get to make your kids breakfast and spend all morning with them. Like, it doesn't fully set in until you do it. And you go, holy cow, this thing is a tool, right? And I think that's another thing. You know, you mentioned things to consider for e-bikes. Like, in my mind, they're utility vehicles, right? I don't think of them as bikes. I think of them as another tool and another arrow in the quiver, if you will. And I think the utility nature, so people should definitely be considering the accessories, right? How are you going to set this bike up as the ideal utility vehicle for your hunt? And so start looking at it from that lens. Like, do you own land? Do you want to do micro food plots? You know, I'm not saying we may or may not have a seed spreader attachment coming down the road, or a sprayer attachment coming down the road, or Yeah. And so start to think about, like, these companies that do it right, that are the innovators, that are doing it first, will always continue to deliver things that you know you want and need, and things that you never even thought of.
Yeah, that's kind of like when you look at your all's product website and stuff like that, you see all of these really nice accessories. And one of those accessories that changed the game for me was the bike carrier. So I'm always looking for a good deal. So I'll be the first to admit that sometimes I'm a little cheap. So when I got my first e-bike, I figured out real quick, like, this thing sucks to haul it around in the bed of the truck. I'm short. I've got to lift it up, grab the back brake, put it the front brake on, throw the tire on, and then it takes up the bed space. So rash choice was, you got to haul the bike on the back of the truck somewhere. And wasn't going to buy a trailer, so you make these little carriers. So I bought a motorcycle carrier initially, and it just never worked right. And then I got one of the fancy ones from Quiet Cat, and I was like, golly, I missed out so many opportunities throughout the years not having the right accessory to haul this bike to and from, because it made it so much easier for me to do that. So having that opportunity and making it readily accessible for me really changed the incorporation of e-bikes into my hunting strategy, because before it was just a pain in the butt to throw it in the back of the truck, it felt like, and took a lot of time away and effort and storage space on long trips. Now I lock the bike on the back of that little trailer and I'm good to go.
Yep. Yeah, man. Ease of use, making the customer's life easy. It should be the goal of any product developer.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Like, if you're not improving somebody's experience or making it easier, what are you even doing? And yep, the whole foundation of an e-bike is to make people's experiences better and easier. Right. Like, so why should the accessories be any different?
I agree wholeheartedly. So let's kind of dive into Quiet Cat. We understand the history and where it came from and the need for it to be in the market. I'm glad we moved away from the trikes and we've got a bicycle now. But kind of let's look at where we're at today. And then later on, we'll talk about this new stuff for 2024.
Yeah, yes, sir. So, you know, in 2023, we've always continued to develop over the last 8 years, right? And if you look at even our 2023 product, you'll notice some things that are just way different. Number one, the integrated battery. If you ever see a battery just kind of strapped on the outside of a bike frame, like, that's just sourced, ordered from China, right? There's nothing custom about that design, and it's a danger. You hear a lot about e-bike fires, right? Battery fires. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And the number one thing that causes a fire is impact to that battery. So if you crash that bike, lay that bike down, and the battery gets impacted by a rock, stump, whatever it is, and you go to plug it in, it basically creates a bomb, right? And that's how those fires start. So naturally, it's like, oh, protect the battery. So all of our bikes for the last 4 years, you've seen that all the batteries are enclosed in the down tube, and that's to protect them. That also insulates them, so it makes them work much better in cold weather, which is a huge pro as well. And then you'll notice too, like our rack, our rear rack is welded to the frame. Again, that's a custom design that we did here in-house, and you won't see on any other bike on planet Earth. And the reason we did the welded rear rack is the utility nature. We know hunters are loading these bikes down heavier than anybody else. And so if your rear rack can't support 300 pounds, the weight of a deer, a really, you know, good mature whitetail, what are you even doing with the thing? So if you try to throw a full-size deer on the back of any other bike, if it's got just a rear rack that bolts into the frame, which you'll see in any other company, it's going to break. It's not going to work. And you're going to wreck your investment. And it's everything like that, all the way down to the little details that you can't see. So in 2023, we launched a proprietary software called VPO. VPO allows you to use our bikes legally on any trail system. So in the US, we have class 1, 2, and 3 trails for legality. You can go into the display of our bike and change to class 2. So your bike then disables its own throttle. It turns the power down so it can only go roughly 20 miles an hour. And it, most importantly, displays that on a display. It says, this bike's in class 2, throttle disabled, etc. And so it makes it perfectly legal. Of course, somebody has tried to copy on us on that already, and they haven't done it right because they didn't display what class it's in, so it doesn't make it legal. But we are continually taking the needs of the hunter into consideration. So you might never think of that, right? You might say, oh, I'm trying to buy a bike. I'm just going to go get the cheapest option. I'm going to go buy brand X, Y, and Z that just sources product from China or even just a Chinese company. Well, number one, it's going to break on you because a lot of them are really cheaply put together, and that's where the price break comes from. But B, it's not going to have all these features that you didn't even think of. So the next time you roll up to a public land spot to hunt and it says on the sign, you know, only class 1 e-bikes allowed, and you have a high-powered e-bike, you have to roll the dice on whether or not you're going to ride. And if you get caught, it's a hefty fine. And they can even compensate everything down to your vehicle for breaking laws. So that's a, you know, just something to consider, right? When you're buying product from a company like Quiet Cat, it's not the cheapest thing out there. And that's for a reason. There's things that we know about because we work in building these products every day that people don't really think about, like the battery being protected, like the welded rear rack, like the VPO technology. So
now, speaking of the public land usage, like how much of a hurdle has it been as a company to educate not only the consumer about the benefits of the e-bike, but also the DNR offices, conservation offices, mm-hmm. as to how these can be utilized on public grounds, but not be detrimental at the same time?
Yeah, that's a constant. That's a really good question, first of all. And that is a constant. I could write a book on that, I guess. Like, I'll try not to spend too much time on it. But
okay,
we've done everything from high level policy work in Washington, D.C. Like that's kind of where it all starts, right? As I did a trip to D.C., met with some senators and congressmen and was explaining just what you said, like the benefits, right? And not taking a hard stance in ignorance and like, oh, e-bikes should be allowed everywhere. Like, no, that's not what we're suggesting. Like out west, we have wilderness areas. I believe those should be protected. I believe they should be horse and foot only, period. Like that is, I'm not saying they should be allowed everywhere. So doing that education of here's what we suggest, right, is like a good system. And any good system has guardrails or parameters. And that's kind of what we were lacking in the US. Because prior to that free class system, we didn't have any guardrails. We didn't know how to define things. And so, like anything, as time goes on, it gets more and more clear and we develop more and more processes. And we don't have a federal system here in the US yet. It's state-based and actually in some cases, individual land group-based. So BLM might have one set of rules. National Forest Service might have another set of rules. And then even one BLM piece of land to another BLM piece of land might have different rules. The important thing is now, for the most part, we're on the same page. It's class 1, class 2, class 3. So it's straightforward. It's just what do they want to pick? and they'll use signage to display that. It's more straightforward now than it was. So we do everything from high level policy to even boots on the ground work, right? Working with groups like Tread Lightly to help trail cleanup. And I think one of the really cool things about Quiet Cat is these groups we work with, whether it's a group like Tread Lightly or the actual agencies themselves. Like that was another big thing is as we got more into this government sales realm, which we sell into, you know, Special Operations Border Patrol and Game and Fish, Game and Parks, State Parks, National Parks, all those groups are using our bikes now. And that helps a lot because when they get to use them and experience them, they get to understand them better, right? So then they can make better decisions. Like the original thought was, oh, we don't want e-bikes because they're going to damage the trail. Well, maybe that's true for a skinny tire e-bike. But if, Cameron, you've ridden mountain bikes before, you know a skinny tire mountain bike coming downhill is going to do far more damage than a fat tire e-bike going uphill or downhill.
Yep.
Because you have more surface area. Also, devil's advocate on the horses. I love horses and I you know, love going backcountry hunting on them. But a horse's hoof is going to do far more damage to the ground than an e-bike tire ever will. So if you're talking about land impact and actual trail damage, a fat tire e-bike is one of the lowest levels of impact on that trail system that you can have. So that's almost a moot point. Now it comes down to like experience level and what you want for access. And so again, trying to do a mixture of like educating and getting people the experiences to make the right decisions is the approach we've taken. And like I said, just not having an ignorant view on like, oh, they should be allowed everywhere, because I don't personally believe that. Like there are certain places they shouldn't be, and that's okay.
Agreed.
Right.
Yep. And so if I'm a consumer and I'm looking to buy my first e-bike, do you guys have a resource on your website that would help me determine like, hey, is this something that I should buy because it's may or may not be legal for what I want to do?
Yeah. So again, for the most part, any of our 23 bikes and forward that have that BPO technology, you're going to be able to adjust them to whatever you want to do. Like they will be legal anyway, except for those areas that do not allow e-bikes, period. And there are some of those, right? Like I use the wilderness area example. They don't allow mechanized travel, period. You cannot even use a pedal bike.
Yeah. Ugh. You're hoofing it or you ain't getting there, I guess. We called it. So I come from Southern West Virginia. So we call anytime you got to walk the Matterhorn Express because coal miners use Matterhorns and you would have to walk to and from a lot of places you'd go to. So anytime that I'm having to walk to and from, it's always called the Matterhorn Express, but e-bikes can really be helpful in that situation. So the VPO technology sounds like a great thing. Looks like it's opening up a lot of doors so people don't get confused or get busted. So before the VPO technology came out, was it the point that like there to go from one trail to the next, you would have to disconnect maybe the throttle manually from the bike in order to just pedal it?
Yeah, there was a couple different routes. I mean, for the most part, the private land owners would get the powerful 1000 watt bike and the public land hunters would get the less powerful 750 watt bike. And that's why we did two different motor sizes in the past. Now VPO changes all that automatically. And you're right. If you had a 750 watt bike and you manually disconnected the throttle, you could, in theory, make a case to a warden and say, no, look, my throttle's disabled. But the reality is it has to display throttle disabled. It has to physically say it. Because what's to stop you from, as you're getting pulled over, just unconnect it real quick?
Well, absolutely. Right?
And so that's kind of the difference between practical and legal.
Okay. Well, I'm glad Quiet Cat's kind of helping solve that problem and getting more use out of these bikes. So we've got VPO from, and that came out in 2023?
Yes, sir.
So what's coming in 2024?
Yeah, man, that's the exciting thing. And, you know, me and you talked about when we want to roll this thing out. And if we're rolling out in May, I can kind of spill my guts a little bit more. But so that's what I'm going to operate under.
Yep. You have my word. We will not come, will not debut this episode until these bikes hit the market.
Cool. So in 2024, we are launching our Apex line of bikes. Apex for us has always been the highest standard in our line. And the 2024 Apex is going to come in an HD and an XD. So Apex HD is going to be the hub drive and Apex XD is the mid drive. The cool thing is this is an entire ground up frame design done here in Eagle, Colorado, the first of its kind. If people don't design bike frames from the ground up. They go source them. And so doing all that here opened up the doors for all kinds of other opportunities. The frame has a kick through and a step over option. So the kick through is going to be an easier one to get on and off of. We really did it for our military and law enforcement customers, but having hunted with it over this last fall in 14 different states, it's awesome when you have a hip belt on a big pack and you don't have to swing your leg up and around. You can just kind of kick it through the frame. The number one thing about the 24 bikes that we are excited to launch and be the first to do actually is an internal gearing system. So essentially it's an automatic transmission. So if you think about how bikes used to be, you'd hit the thumb button to manually switch your gears. Well, the little thing that hangs down below your gears is called a derailleur. It's spelled with a U, it's French. The derailleur is the number one. If you look at our customer service issues over the last 10 years, 86% of them have to do with the derailleur, either ripping off, getting caught in grass, corn stalks, bean stubble, whatever it might be. The hunter's worst nightmare is a derailleur. It's just not like bikes were not meant to go off-road because of the derailleur. Yep. The number two most common thing that we hear about are chain snapping, because we're trying to send a lot of power to the rear wheel and that little bike chain. The reason the chain has to be small is the derailleur has to be able to move the chain. So the best thing about this automatic transmission is it fixes the top two common problems that bikes face. No more derailleur, because you don't need it. It's all internally geared. And because you don't need a derailleur, you can put a motorcycle chain on the sucker. So you're never going to break a chain again. And we can send all 1,500 watts from this ultra powerful motor to that back wheel and not worry about breaking the chain.
Sounds like a major improvement, because that derailleur has given me fits through the years with various bikes that I've had, whether it be as a kid on a little Walmart pedal bike to an e-bike of today's standards, because soybeans and things like that, like, man, if you're in tall grass, it's just a matter of time till that derailleur catches something or you lay that bike down the wrong direction and you break it. So getting rid of the derailleur is a big deal.
It's a big deal, like a really big deal. And how it works is almost like a centrifugal clutch type system. And so our XD model, the mid drive, is five internal gears, self-shifting, all done with the brain of the bike, basically. And then the hub drive bike is two gears. And so you have like a starting hill climbing gear and then more of a sustained gear. And believe it or not, Cameron, that automatic transmission, it's cool because we're the first people to do it, especially in the fat tire off-road space, and do it to the level we did it. But that is just scratching the surface of the new things. So we have essentially five new technologies in this bike that nobody else has. And the automatic transmission is just one of them.
Wow. Well, I'll be interested to see what you guys come up with on that side of it once we get some more information. Hey, let me interrupt this podcast episode real quick and talk about huntinggeardeals.com. If you're interested in saving money on hunting gear, there's no better place on the web. Basically, what huntinggeardeals.com does is scour the web for discounted products on hunting gear and shares them in one convenient location. So type in huntinggeardeals.com in your web browser and sign up for the daily deal email so you never miss a deal. Now, back to the show. So forgive me if I'm don't know the full product line, but have you guys had hub drive bikes in the past, or at least in the last couple of years?
Yeah. So we had an opening price point model called the Pioneer, which was like a cheap bolt on rack style, like low power, hub drive. Then we had the Ranger, which is our higher end hub drive. That higher end hub drive, you know, Ranger was our staple, hub drive model and our most common bike. It has the best value within our line, I believe, and is our top seller. And then you stepped up into the Apex Sport, which is like our lower level mid drive, and then our Apex Pro is our higher level mid drive.
Okay, so between those two, so just so the audience understands where that power is coming from when you say hub, coming from the center of the wheels, are you getting dual hubs, front and rear, or are you just getting one or the other?
So we have a Ranger all-wheel drive now as well. And that Ranger all-wheel drive is a dual hub. So 750 watts in the front hub, 750 watts in the rear hub. You have a thumb selector on your left hand, so you can select front wheel only, rear wheel only, or both wheels at the same time. Okay. That bike's great for people that live down in the clay. It's got quite a bit of power for a hub drive. And then the next level up in power is definitely your mid drive. And to your point, Cameron, hub means the motor's in the actual wheel. The easiest way to describe the difference is a mid drive, the motor is actually turning the chain. That chain is turning the gears and the gear is turning the wheel. So you're getting the mechanical advantage of whatever gear you're in with the mid drive. With the hub drive, the motor is just turning the wheel itself. It is not utilizing the gears whatsoever.
Okay. So in the grand scheme of things, which bike would, you said is better for clay and that muddy terrain is with a hub drive. What about as far as climbing in like a dry, rocky climate? Is it a mid drive or a hub stall bike?
Anytime, if you're a heavier set person or you're trying to haul a lot of gear or you're trying to climb hills, mid drive is always going to be a better option.
Okay.
Because of the use of the mechanical gears. For the people that live in the clay, or that's another problem with derailleurs, is you can't ride a derailleur in clay, because as soon as that clay dries, you're not going anywhere. And so the easiest answer for that, Cameron, is if you live in the clay, buy a 24 bike. if you live where there's tall grass, bean stubble, or corn stalks, buy a 24 bike.
Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So we get into this situation, and what about suspension? So for me, coming out of mountain biking and that kind of thing, a dual suspension bike for me was way more comfortable because I found it more enjoyable to ride, but not a necessity to hunt with. What I found this year after testing some bikes was in the summertime and the springtime, when I wasn't utilizing them for hunting purposes, I found myself utilizing them on the trails for fun, just to ride. If I had a dual suspension, a single suspension, I wasn't out riding as much because it was beating me up a little bit more. So are we getting a dual suspension bike this year?
Yeah, we've had a full suspension bike. Okay. And what you're referring to is the front suspension's on the fork. The rear suspension is actually in the frame.
Yep.
A little sneeze there, but that bike for us is called the Ibex. And so the Ibex is our full suspension. The downside to a full suspension bike, and why we only do one of them, is you can't have a welded rear rack. So your frame has to be able to articulate on a full suspension bike, and the usage of a rack does not allow for that articulation.
Makes sense.
We have always built bikes around utility. We want to provide three things at Quiet Cat, and we want to do those three things better than everybody else. And so far we have power, utility, and durability. We will always have the most durable bike, the most powerful bike, and a bike that offers the most utility. And so the full suspension kind of compromises on that utility factor. So we did one for the people that want to go like overlanding and enjoy riding. And really, honestly, for our military customers more than anything, because they carry packs. They don't really use the rear racks or the trailer accessories as much. But yeah, we have one option, and we will be doing an Ibex 2.0 here, refreshing it in 2024. But for the most part, we build what they call hard tail bikes, which is front suspension only. And again, that's because of that rear rack. Now I'm going to throw a little curveball at you, and offer a pro tip. There are ways to make a hardtail bike very comfortable to ride. And number one way to do that is a suspension seat post. So what that does is it turns a front suspension only bike into essentially a full suspension bike. So it creates suspension under your butt in the seat post, but not in the frame. So that allows you to have the benefits of a hardtail, lets you have that rear rack and all that utility, and it lets you have the comfort in the suspension seat post. And so knowing that, in 2024, all of our Apex HDs and XDs include a suspension seat post. They come with the bike, and they also come with a dropper post. So if you're used to riding high-end mountain bikes, you'll see a lever on your left thumb. You hit that lever, and your seat will just drop away from you. And so what you do is, as you're getting aggressive and riding downhill, you want that seat out of your way so you can throw the bike around. You also might want to be able to put the seat down to make the mounting the bike easy. And then when you're pedaling, you want to take a nice full leg stroke. And so you want the seat to be up. And you don't want to get on and off the bike and do the manual thing every time. So what we've done in our 2024 bikes is we've figured out how to do a suspension and dropper post in the same unit. And so you will have a dropper post and suspension built into that dropper, all that come with every single one of our bikes.
Nice. That was a smooth transition. So for you to go in from the curveball that I give you and then already have the problem figured out, that was not planned, guys. That was just really good pre-planning from Quiet Cat years ago, and then it just all panned out for 2024. So that was pretty smooth.
Hunting on a bike as much as I do, I feel your pain, like your butt pain, your literal pain. And so we started to get into those suspension seat posts, and we just finally decided, like, you know what, everybody should have these. Like, and we're not going to leave it as an option anymore. Like, if you're buying one of our bikes, you're getting everything you'll need. Back to my discussion before, like, sometimes people don't know what they want and they don't know what they need. And for a company to be able to provide that and surprise you with that, I mean, then you're doing your job.
Yeah. One of the biggest things for me when I was looking for a bike was hydraulic disc brakes. The ability to, when I'm going downhill with a full backpack full of gear, tree stands or whatever, I want to stop. So are most of the bikes this year come equipped with hydraulic disc brakes, or do you have something even better than that I don't even know about?
Good question. Yeah. All will have hydraulic disc brakes. Okay. For four piston, you know, super high end hydraulic disc brakes. You hit the nail on the head, especially when you're starting to talk about a lot of weight, like loading a trailer down. So a way I use my bike out here the most, I actually don't hunt off it a ton out west, but I use it to get my base camp in really deep, just like you would use a horse. And so when I'm hauling my trailer in with my wall tent and my wood stove, my trailer weighs 350 pounds. So to stop that thing coming downhill, mechanical brakes wouldn't cut it. Right. And so that's where you want those high-end hydraulics.
Okay. Wow. You guys have a lot of stuff going on this year that I was not anticipating. So that's pretty exciting for me. And I've had a chance to utilize e-bikes for several years now. And one of the more unique ways that I've found to use an e-bike throughout the year is during shed season. So we've got a lot of open fields, cut cornfield, soybeans, winter wheat. If I can grab that e-bike and scour a field really quick to and from, instead of having to walk, I can hit multiple properties in a day and not be nearly as tired as I would be had I had to walk all of it. I'm still find the same amount of sheds. I can scan that field and cover that field quickly and more efficiently. And we talked about time earlier and how important that was as far as time saving and time management. That's one of the biggest benefits for me outside of hunting season is during that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's all those, like I mentioned, scouting too. Like, there's a lot of uses for them outside of, you know, just active hunting. I mean, even fishing. Like, I have a raft out here in Colorado. We do a lot of fly fishing. You always have the age-old problem with a raft. You have to have two cars or two vehicles, get them to drop off and a pickup. And so, you know, with an e-bike, it's awesome. You throw the e-bike in the raft, you drop the raft off, you float down the river, and then you e-bike up and get your truck. So you can now do rafting with one person, and that was never possible before.
Never even considered that. Yeah, I used to do a lot of solo wade fishing and stuff like that. So that long walk back, and did a float trip one time, and we get all the way to the truck. We'd floated all day, and my buddy looked at me. He's like, well, go get the truck. And I went, I didn't bring the keys. I left them in your truck. So we had to bummer ride back. You talk about a long day and long night, but we finally got back. So
we have a person in our group that's notorious for doing that. So we've removed them from key holding duty. So one thing else I wanted to touch on too, and I'll kind of go through some of the more of those unique features on that 24 product, but I mentioned that automatic transmission and that thicker chain. And we talked about VPO earlier, but we did a VPO 2.0 for this bike, and it still has all the compliance stuff that the old bike had, but it has two more speed modes now. And there were modes we couldn't do before because, like, we would have been snapping chains like toothpicks because the amount of power that we're putting into it. But what we did is we did a climb mode, And so what Climb does is it puts all 1,500 watts of power from the motor into the lowest gear and the lowest gear only. And so that is just torque city. So whether you're climbing a hill or pulling a trailer, it is going to, it'll be light years ahead of any other bike that's out there, simply for the fact that they can't put that much power into the rear wheel because they would be breaking chains. And then the next one is stealth mode, which is we've taken the motor, made it as quiet as possible, and only given you access to the first two gears. And then there's the old Eco Trail and Boost. So you know, VPO 2.0 is another really cool thing. We talked about the dropper suspension post. We went to a twist throttle instead of a push button throttle. And the biggest benefit of that is the twist throttle, you can actually feather into the power and feather out of the power, right? So before, that throttle was really more like an off-on button. You couldn't really creep into it. And so a lot more controllability with the throttle, dropper suspension post, the battery. This is going to blow your mind, but we created the largest battery in the e-bike space. And so our down tube is significantly bigger. It's a very burly looking bike with a 30 amp hour battery, wow, which gives you about 100 miles on one charge. So significantly higher than anybody has ever done. And
that's
then
a single battery,
one that's battery, given it, wow, and enclosed in the frame, not just strapped on the outside of the frame.
Okay.
So fully UL certified, which is a big deal for our military partners. And then the last major thing on the bike is, I mentioned the custom frame set before, kick through and step over. Well, we also did our first ever modular rear rack. So we came up with a completely patented frame design, again, built from the ground up here in Eagle, where the rack is just as strong as our old welded rear rack, but it's removable. And so we were able to achieve that by building the frame around the rack instead of just building the frame and then figuring out how to make the rack bolt to the frame. So we approached it kind of from a different lens. And so that's what's going to give this the ability to do those really cool accessories down the road. Like I said, a custom rear rack for a seed spreader or a sprayer that really nobody else has been able to do. And so really exciting things coming down the lines in terms of the utility nature of our bikes. And then in addition to the modular rear rack, we also did a modular front rack. And so you have the ability for a flat shelf or basket or whatever you want to do. The head tube of the bike has a mounting point for a front rack now. And overall, there are 118 mounting points on this bike for accessories.
Wow. So here's a question, and I don't know if you guys have this data in front of you. How much is this bike going to weigh? I mean, you got a bigger battery, built-in mm-hmm. frame, heavy-duty chain. Mm-hmm. Can we expect it to be a little heavier?
Yes, sir. Yeah. And so our old bikes, battery in, were about high 60s, call it 70 pounds. This will be roughly 20 pounds heavier. So call it, you know, high 80s. Okay. In terms of weight with the battery in. Now, the best thing about our battery system is, as you know, you just put a key in, turn the key, the battery pops out. And so that battery makes up about 20 to 30 pounds of that weight. So if you're looking to load your bike up into your truck, you can pop the battery out. And now it went from, you know, high 80s down to more in that like 60s range.
Can we pause and talk a little bit about batteries? I know they're lithium batteries on a bike. But I know my local bike shop, if I have a problem with a bike, an e-bike, and I need to take it to somebody that actually can work on it. So I had to have somebody tune a derailleur once. They would not let me leave that bike there overnight without removing the battery. So not having a removable battery would have prevented me from having the maintenance done on that bike. So that's a great thing for me, not having a Quiet Cat dealer nearby.
Yeah, and they're smart to do that. And the reason they're smart to do that is insurance and liability.
Yep.
And so I mentioned that e-bike fires are very common in cheap e-bikes. And bike shops, they get a lot of cheap e-bikes because they're the ones that break the most. Yep. And so for an e-bike to allow somebody to store a bike there would be a huge risk because those batteries most likely are mounted outside the frame and they could very well start their whole shop on fire. So very smart of them. I'm sure when... It's always funny when somebody takes like a Quiet Cat into a bike shop. The bike shop is always like, what is that? Because they're used to working on skinny tire, low power pedal assist bikes. and then you bring the quiet cat in. I mean, as an analogy, that'd be like you bring in an F-350 Super Duty turbocharged diesel into a Subaru shop. They would be like, what is that?
You know what I mean? Yeah. And the truth be told of it, like, they're always like, I don't know anything about these. And I'm like, it's not hard, man. Just I keep busting the tire on it. Like, just give me a new tube. Yeah.
And when it comes to bike parts, yeah, bike shops will fix all of our, like you said, tires, derailleurs, brakes. They're all standard components. And we build them that way on purpose so the bike shop can maintain them. The one thing they won't be able to touch is the programming, the motor, and the battery, which just so happen to be the three least likely things to break. So it's good because, you know, you don't really need to fix those things. They're pretty bomb-proof.
So back to that battery and getting the most life out of this battery, for not just for a single charge, but longevity. What can we do as consumers, as bike owners, to make sure that we are protecting that power source to get the most out of it?
Great question. A lot of it has to do with like long-term storage. If you're going to store the bike over winter, for example, if you live in a cold climate, bring that battery inside, right? Store it inside. And then don't leave it on a charger. That's another thing. You know, we have our electrical engineer here in-house is a freaking genius. He actually came to us from Garmin, and he was instrumental in developing this 2024 bike and how the brain of the bike works with the utility of this transmission, and it all just kind of works in unison. And what he always says is never leave your battery at full charge. Try to store it or leave it at half charge. That's like an ideal state. It's not a big deal if you overcharge it. But don't ever just leave it on the charger fully. That's another big tip. Aside from that, I mean, a battery has so many what they call cycles. So it has so many abilities to fully recharge it. And so as a general rule of thumb, you want to get as much as you can out of that charge before you recharge it. So if you're going to be, a lot of times I use my bike just riding it around the block with my kids. I use probably 1% of the battery every time I ride it. So rather than every time I use 1% coming back and charging it, I won't charge it. I'll ride it 60, 70 times around the block. So it's down to about 20% before I then charge it. So those are all just some tips.
So one thing that I noticed during testing was how the bike would perform. And forgive me if I'm being wrong. I've tested a lot of bikes. I don't know if this was a Quiet Cat bike or not, but as I got into certain stages in that lower percentile of that battery life, the bike would kind of slow itself down to kind of help you get maybe back to camp without having to pedal as much. Is that a normal feature, or was that just coincidence?
Yeah, it's normally it's a matter of current. I don't know if I'm using the correct term there. So if somebody is an electrical engineer that's listening, drop it in the comments if I'm wrong. But I would tell you that once you're right, it gets down to call it like a really low, like 5%. I don't necessarily think that it's intentionally trying to save itself. I just think it has less to deliver.
Okay.
Right. And so you do see a little reduction in power as it gets lower.
Yeah. I was really surprised when you got into that like last 10% of that battery, and like, oh, you think, well, I've been this distance on the 90%, then I know I should get this distance out of it. And then it just kept going. And it was like, I wish this thing would just hurry up and die so I could end the test. But it just kept seeming like it wanted to keep going.
I think a little bit that's the reserve factor too. Like, okay, instead of, maybe there wasn't 10% on it, maybe there was 20% left on it, but it displays 10%. So you don't get stranded.
Yep. And that's a good thing. It's like having the reserve feature on an ATV or something like that. I can't tell you how many times when I was a kid riding around on a four wheeler that I was way too young to be able driving. Yep.
Same. I used to be able to flip that switch without getting off. I knew exactly where it was under my butt.
Just straight underneath it, flip it on and keep on rolling.
Yep.
So, man, I knew coming into this, like, this was going to be a fun podcast for me to go into, because I've had a lot of experience playing on bikes, but to actually hear what's coming out new, and I get to sit on this for a couple months before the bike hits, and I just get to be chomping at the bit, be like, oh, man, I loved my 2023. Like, now I got to have 2024. So,
yeah, I'll tell you that the 24 bikes we have coming they're special. It's very rare especially a category like e-bikes that are so fastly, they're progressing so fast. it's very rare to take a leap and a bound like this. It was not just like, oh, we came up with one thing that was new. It's like, no, there are five new things on this bike that nobody will have for however long it takes them to copy us, 2 years maybe. And it will be night and day ahead of everybody else. And it's really cool to be a part of that. It's been really cool to be a part of the product development and the prototyping. And, you know, our engineering team here, from the electrical guys to the mechanical guys, they freaking knocked it out of the park.
So knowing that, like, I as a consumer thought there was a cap in the electric e-bike market in the hunting sector. But I had a chance to attend a trade show with an e-bike, and the amount of people that went by the booth talking and asking about those e-bikes blew my mind. So as a consumer, here I thought we had reached the cap, and that was years ago, and we're still growing. We are still expanding. So I feel like we've not even really scratched the surface of the usability of e-bikes in the hunting market. Is that kind of the same thought process you guys have?
Yeah, it's hard. Like, when you look at market data, it's really hard to get market data specifically on hunting. Like, we have market data for overall e-bikes, and we saw a big boom post-COVID, and then we saw kind of a slowdown with high inventory levels, and now all that's being righted. We're seeing retail actually come back for the first time since COVID as of January of this year. They're up year over year for the first time. We try to assess things off of a acronym called TAM, so total addressable market, right? And so when you're looking at the hunting market as a whole, it's like, well, what's our total TAM, and what percentage of that is already saturated, as in what percentage of that total populace already has that product or that product category? And it's hard to say exactly, but I'm along the line of thinking of exactly what you are. And that's, it's undersaturated in the sense that I believe maybe 20% of bikers, probably less, 10, call it, have e-bikes. In general, hunters, the type of person that is a hunter, myself included, we tend to be kind of laggers in technology adoption. I was the last person I knew of to get a cell phone. I was the last person I knew of to get social media. Like, when I hear of new things, I'm just like, I don't know about that. I probably don't need it. And I think that happens a lot. And I think right now, you know, e-bikes have been around now for 10 years, as when we started our company, it was 10 years ago. And now you're starting to just see hunters really adopt the technology, which is interesting. Because out of any consumer segment that could use an e-bike, hunters have the most use for them. The e-bike is the best tool for a hunter. Like, there's a lot of people that use e-bikes that probably don't need them, right? Surfers are using e-bikes right now, and they freaking are only going from the parking lot to the beach. They're going 200 yards, and they're using an e-bike to get that 200 yards. Hunters are hiking 10 miles a day, 20 miles a day, and they're carrying heavy weight. Right? Like, they have the best use case for the product, but they haven't fully adopted it yet. But that, I think that turning point is kind of right now. I really do. You can see, to your point on trade show examples, right? Like, as I go to trade shows, when I was going to trade shows 2 years ago, even 2 years ago, it was like, whoa, what is that? I had never heard of it before. And then now this year, it's more like, yeah, we've been doing our research. We're going to bite in the next 6 months, right? Or yeah, we just got one of your bikes. We love it. You know what I mean? And so I think that turning point of technology adoption is finally here. And I think within the next 2 years, you're going to see that number go from 10% to 40 or 50.
Yeah, it surprised me. Like, when I think of e-bikes for hunting, I'm thinking somebody active going back in the backcountry. But when I was at the trade show, that was the exact opposite. It was small parcel landowners that were up in age that weren't able to walk to and from and get like they used to, and they wanted an e-bike to get to and from.
Yep.
It was, and that blew me away as a consumer and somebody in this hunting space, because I had the exact opposite consumer in mind for that product.
Yep. That's where the e-bike differs from the bike, you know, and you're spot on. Our person who's like our, I wouldn't call them our core customer, but they're definitely our most common customer, is going to be that small parcel landowner who hunts whitetails, who is, call it, north of 50 years in age. mostly from a mobility perspective, right? And yeah, they're using it to get to and from. You're exactly right. And the reality is we have a really, that age demographic is very fastly growing right now, if you look at the overall populace data across the US. And so as that grows, obviously, opportunity grows. But I think that I'm young. I am extremely fit. Like during September, travel no less than 20 miles a day with a 60-pound pack in my back, right? Like just what I do. So I keep in shape as a result of that. I'm hiking up and down these beautiful mountains that I get to live in, but I have just as much use, if not more, for an e-bike than that plus 50 consumer. But you're right. When you think backcountry e-bike, like you think these people that are super fit and just going super deep and staying a long time. And that's not necessarily the case. Like there are people that use it for that, but most people that are using it are just trying to stay mobile, right? They're trying to beat age. And so I love it. Like whatever you can find a use case for it on, use it. That's why we build them.
Yeah. I think I used mine a lot this year. So I live in a state where you're allowed to bait. So it was cold in the wintertime and I'm like, I don't want to haul the four wheeler. I'll just throw the corn on the back of the bike and just haul the bike. And yep. I had multiple hunts where I was sitting in the tree stand and I can see my bicycle down over the hill and deer would walk right by and just like, oh, that's something weird, but they weren't scared. They just kept on a rolling.
Yep. I'm going to give away a little secret here. I'm not going to give away the guy's name, but he's I consider one of my better friends in the hunting space. Him and Bill Jordan are the two people who have killed, 5 deer over 200 inches with a bow outside of high fence, just, you know, normal hunting situations. His number one key to success in killing these monster deer, he lives in a state where he can bait as well. And what he's done is developed a system with cellular cameras and baiting that is just like a foolproof system. And he swears up and down that the number one thing he does different than everybody else is he uses his e-bike to fill his bait stations. He, as a rule, he only goes in and fills his feeders as few times as possible. So he's put on extra size hoppers on his feeders. And so he's got it to where he only needs to fill his feeders once a month. So he loads down a quiet cat. He puts 35 feed bags between the bike and the trailer. He goes in silently and scentlessly at a certain time. I'm not going to give away timing or anything like that, but he has a certain time when he goes in according to, you know, moon phase, temperature, time of day. And he goes in that one time a month and he fills the feeder entirely and he gets the hell out silently, scentlessly. And he swears up and down, it makes all the difference in the world. Right. And I trust him because he's you don't know the guy's name. He's never posted any of this publicly. He stays very quiet about it because he's kept it a secret and he wants to continue that way. And I'm not going to ruin that for him. So I'm not going to give away like locations or names, but I'm going to tell you right now, he is a big buck killing son of a gun more than anybody you've ever met. And that he swears up and down by it.
And he's adapted a different tool. So cellular trail camera data, that's a tool. E-bikes are a tool. The bow that you hunt with is a tool. All of these are tools within the hunter's arsenal that you don't have to have, but if you utilize them to their advantage, man, it makes all the difference in the world sometimes.
The best hunters are just smart people. It's a fact. Like, it's a smarter caveman, right? And the smartest caveman uses the best tools in the best way. And that's just what he has done. And if I went through and rattled everything off in this podcast that he does to be successful, he'd kill me. But I'll tell you right now, how he uses everything, from how he sets up his trail cameras to how he sets up his ground blinds to how he sets up his feeders, he's not buying something off the shelf and just using it as intended. He is adapting everything, and he is using everything in a very specific way that I have never seen anybody that uses them the way he does, and he doesn't talk about it. And that's amazing. Like, he is doing it himself and keeping it for himself, and he has just been benefiting year over year over year. I think he's got 20 deer over 180. And now he doesn't kill him.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Like, the wow. Guy's a savage. He's a savage.
Wow. That's a shocking number.
Yeah. No, like, I don't think he's ever, like, one accidental shot, like a 172. But he doesn't shoot him. Has never shot him under 180. And he, like, again, five. He has 5 over 200 with a bow. That's unheard of. Like, literally, it's unheard of. There's only one other person I know of. It's Bill Jordan. That's it.
Huh. Well, that's an impressive feat, and it will leave me thinking about how my hunting season is going to go this year. But the cool thing is, this podcast will drop in May. The consumer will be able to go straight from listening to this podcast to check out your website, your social medias. Where can they find more information about you guys?
Yeah, quietcat.com, quietcat ebike, you know, on Instagram, YouTube. We're really ramping up our YouTube stuff. I want to start getting way more into the educational side of things, not just on like what we talked about, like bike parts and statistics, but more like how do different people like my friend find success with this e-bike? What does his system look like for feeding, filling his feeders? How does he set up his bike? How can you help replicate that to find success? And like, how do I use them out in the West, right? Like, how have I found success over the last 8 years of hunting a ton of stakes and different, you know, setups? And so keep an eye out for that, because I think people are going to find a lot of benefit.
Yeah. I mean, at this stage of the game, you have to have a social media marketing tool, and that, and YouTube's just another one of those tools, just like an e-bike is for a hunter. If you don't have anything else to add, I think today's episode has been fantastic, and it makes me want to jump on the bike and go for a ride.
For sure. It makes me want to go chase some turkeys, man. I'm starting to hear those gobbles in my sleep. So it's that time of year.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So I've been heating up a little bit on the shed hunting. Turkey season's still a few weeks away for us, and that e-bike will be a staple of my season as that goes on. Just because it does one of two things. Gets me there quicker and quietly.
Yes, sir. That's the name of the game.
That's right. All right, folks, that's all for today's episode. Thank you for tuning in. As always, check out huntinggeardeals.com for more information.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity, and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity, and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.